Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinathi Guma, and joining me to wrap this week up are Ricus Reuters from PSG Wealth Sandton and Roy Mutoni from APSA Asset Management. Thank you very much to the both of you for joining us. Starting with you, Ricus, I mean, so last week we had these deep losses in the markets. There was a lot of noise coming out of central banks, both in Europe and in the US. What would you say the theme was for markets this week?
Well, I think an attempt to have a bit of a bounce. It's interesting that, for example, yesterday on the US markets, there was pretty bad news fundamentally as far as their flash purchasing managers indices were concerned. And during the week, a number of other data as well. And even though sort of the US markets, and I'm using that just as a proxy for most other markets, were trading sort of up and down in the session, they managed to close higher, which is possibly, and this is a possibly with a big possible, that the market itself or the market participants are starting to not react to bad news, which is always indicative of, if not the turnaround, a turnaround, or at least a bounce. So, and considering the slew of bad news we've had over the past 3 weeks, I think it's encouraging. I'm not saying that all of this market or global markets have bottomed, but it's certainly at that point where one could see a very short-term bounce.
And it was very surprising because the comments that came out of Powell were quite hawkish. Even at some point, when asked by one of the Republican senators if we could go to 100 basis point hikes, he said he's not taking anything off the table. I mean, with those markets, even with all of that, those markets still remaining in the green. Roy, what did you think of that reaction when, you know, the European markets, the JSE, were all under pressure except for the U.S.?
So the thing is, I think markets are now coming to the conclusion that one thing is very clear, the Fed's not going to come and rescue them. So that's the first point. Then the second point is that the markets are beginning to question whether the Fed is actually right and whether its reaction function is actually going to function as we expect. Mm-hmm. So they're very aggressive on inflation, and it almost seems like you'll do whatever it takes. But the market begins to ask, maybe inflation is rolling over, maybe your current hikes have already worked. So I think what we're seeing with all of this volatility is the baton changing hands between those who feel that the Fed is in control and those who feel that maybe they'll overreach and engage in policy error. And each new data point seems to prove different things. So in the course of this week, you saw a couple of interesting data points. The PMIs that came out of most developed markets just seemed negative. And PMIs are a good indicator of where economic growth is going to be over the next 6 to 12 months. And that probably meant that people felt maybe we're going into a recession, into a global recession. And then there's the problem with the EU, where it's not clear how they're going to solve this problem of huge interest rate gaps between the low yielders and the high yielders. So I think each piece of news brings a reaction, and the next piece of news brings another reaction. So the volatility is just around uncertainty and lack of clarity as to what the next few steps are.
Mm. Ricus, do you think the Fed has lost credibility at this point? Everything is moving so fast, and you know the Fed is trying to keep up, but I don't know. Do you think they've lost credibility, or do you still have some confidence in the central bank?
Well, I don't believe it's only the Fed. I mean, most, if not all, central bankers got this one wrong, and I think, as Roy said, I think that's part of the volatility. They are, it's not that there's not confidence in what they do, but their forecasts also are all over the place. And normally one looks for guidance as far as your central banks are concerned. And that's simply the confidence in the guidance isn't there. You know, and as Roy explained, they're, whether it be the Fed or the European Central Bank, are between a rock and a hard place because they are dealing with global economic circumstances that we haven't seen in decades. So they're either going to be too hawkish or not hawkish enough, which sounds like sitting on the fence, but that explains the volatility. You can't really, with what's happening at the moment, and that's on a more of a geopolitical framework, you can't really measure it and say, well, history tells us, because we're making new history at the moment.
Listen, and with this type of environment, you would actually want to get your returns monthly. So there's a question from a viewer. I just want to know if there are any stocks that pay dividends monthly. Roy?
On the JSE, none that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I think among the property stocks, you'll find some frequent pairs, but definitely not monthly pairs. But in the US market, you'll find a lot of property REITs and energy limited energy partnerships that pay monthly, and some of them actually have quite some very solid dollar yield.
Okay.
If the listener is interested, that's something that you can explore.
All right. On your side, Rikus, do you look at companies that pay out dividends monthly?
Not really, and mostly because as far as the local market is concerned, I don't think there are any.
Okay.
And if it is a monthly payment, whether it be in the US or anywhere else, then that's very similar to what you would get on a bond type of investment. So in that sense, it would be comparable to that.
All right. There's a question here on ETFs. I have the Satrix Divi and Satrix Fini ETFs, which have done well. I also have Satrix Property and Satrix Capped All Share. Should I hold all the ETFs for long term, or should I look at other ones? And if so, which one can the panel suggest I add? So we've got four: the Divi, the Fini, the Property, and the Capped All Share. Should the viewer be holding all of them for the long term, Roy, or are there ones that you would offload?
No, I would say, first of all, the viewer's done quite well. ETFs are long-term investments, and because you generally will invest ETFs at regular intervals, what happens is you're buying when the market is rallying, you're buying when the market is down, you're averaging out, and over time you build your wealth. So I think he's done quite well. The one thing which I would caution is against holding a huge basket of them, because some of them are quite correlated. And if you look at the underlying stocks, you'll find that they're common. So what you're doing is you're duplicating your investment and effectively just paying more charges for exactly the same return. I think, for instance, if you looked at the Satrix Fini and the Satrix Divi, I think you'll see the banks are good dividend payers, and they're quite dominant in both of those, quite significant in both of those. So that's the one thing that, just to caution investors to do, look into, when you're buying the ETF, don't just look at the headline name. Look into the constituents, look at its track record historically, look what it's paid, and then make your call from there. But diversification for somebody who's not looking at the market every day is really good, and consistent investing always pays off in the long term.
Sticking with you, Roy, would there be another one that you would add to that list?
No, I think when I look at the list, he's got the broad market with a capped index.
Yeah.
He's got the dividend yielder, and like I said, the dividend yielder and the Fini have some stocks in common, and also the broad market will have some stocks in common, and then the property stocks have been uncorrelated. I mean, they've underperformed quite significantly recently.
Yeah.
But there's a place in every investor's portfolio for property stocks, particularly because of the yield. So now I would say he's done well. He's done well. It's just be careful about duplicating.
Yeah. All right. Another ETF question for you, Rikus. Any dividend-paying ETFs that you can recommend?
Well, it ties in perfectly with what Roy has just said, and with that person itself. Obviously, with something like property and the Satrix Divi and Satrix Fini, that's obviously geared towards some kind of income-generating ETF, because that's, as Roy said, the banks, which is the Finis, are paying very good dividends. Dividend, the Satrix Divi is by definition concentrated on high dividend payers. And property also in good times delivers you some type of income growth. I think what's lacking there is something that, well, two things lacking. First of all, this is concentrated on the South African market, and I think it should get some offshore exposure. And then my preferred exposure in that sense is global, and you can get that through something called the Global Dividend Fund, which is not geared on the quantum of the dividend that you're getting in the shares that the fund invests in, but it's concentrated on companies that are growing their dividends at a good rate. And the philosophy behind that is that even though the quantum of the dividend that you get from a company that is growing its dividends might not be very good at the moment, the fact that they are growing means that they should turn into a mature company that pays out a good dividend yield in the end. And that's so your focus there will be on capital growth as the company increases in size, because a dividend growth is a pretty good indicator of a company that is actually in a growth phase as far as the income profile is concerned. Mm.
All right, here's another question. I don't know who looks at this closely. So, Financial Mail article of this week does not refer to shareholders' losses. This is on Comair. So, Financial Mail article of this week does not refer to shareholders' losses or Gideon Novick, who was the CEO of Comair and now co-founder of Lyft. Is there a link to the unsuccessful rescue plan of Comair and an opportunity for Lyft? I think, Roy, you kind of...
Yeah, maybe I can take a stab there. I looked for the article, but I didn't quite get the detail. But I think to answer the listener, remember Comair delisted at the time when it went into business rescue, which effectively meant shareholders went to zero. I don't think there's any recovery there from ordinary shareholders. That's one thing. Gideon Novick, I think, left a long time ago. So I don't think he was associated with Comair at the time it went under. I stand to be corrected, but I don't think so. And as for opportunities for Lyft, it's quite clear. Without Comair and British Airways operating in this local market, there's definitely a big gap there for somebody who's got a reliable airline, good experience, and is able to deliver a service. We have a shortage of flights. We have a shortage of planes. So anybody who's invested in right now, who's well capitalized, will probably do well, and that's probably what Lyft is aiming to do. Very similar to what you said, FlySat. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, but also this feeds into tourism because. I mean, we're all worried. 40% of the supply from Comair is gone, and now it will feed into inflation when it comes to the prices that airlines charge. So, Rikus, how are you looking at the hospitality stocks right now, especially considering also that some of the last remaining regulations have been removed?
For the moment, yes. I mean, that can't be negative for hospitality stocks. I think certainly as far as the hotel groups are concerned, there's a lot of gearing on the operational side. You know, they've cut their costs as far as the upkeep and staffing and what have you for their properties are concerned. So any increase in whether it be tourism or business travel, you can get very good operational gearing from that, and for what has been a disastrous sector to be in, can be very or a lot more profitable, you know, 6 months from now, 12 months from now, if everything else holds. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if we get a reduction in travel costs as a result of energy prices stabilizing, I'm not saying coming down, but at least stabilizing. So there's a lot of positive that can influence these companies at the moment. Mm. So I'm neutral to to and positive on the sector itself.
Okay, neutral going to positive. City Lodge actually came out with a trading update saying that their occupancies are at levels now where they are on track to break even or even above break-even levels. Roy, is there anything concerning for you on City Lodge? Maybe that debt burden, maybe?
No, actually, I think City Lodge is doing a good job of recovering. I mean, you can imagine to have been shut down to the extent that they were, and the restructuring that they had to go under just means that when you look at their numbers now, you can see at least they're coming out of that hole and they're beginning to operate again. Remember, City Lodge isn't so much a tourism destination hotel; it's more for business travel, and I guess that bodes well. Seeing them having higher occupancies bodes well for what we perceive to be a recovering economy, and I think that's a good thing. I really don't have much in terms of concerns with City Lodge. We're watching them closely to see how they reopen and how they recover with the economy.
Yeah, quite interesting that you mentioned that City Lodge is for business travel. I mean, I guess that's bound to get better because of the relaxed restrictions. And of course, now people are going to be lobbying for more conferences, bigger conferences. So, yeah, really fits in. There's a question here from a viewer. With very high inflation in South Africa, even expected to breach 7%, where is the best place to hang your hat on the JSE, Ricus?
We're going to lose the least money. Sorry, I'm being flippant there, but that's basically what it comes down to. Markets tend to overshoot, and at the moment there's a lot of negativity. I spoke earlier about the possibility of a bounce. I still think that might be a very short-term correction, but it's essentially still a very negative, not only local but global equity market. So if you can be someplace where you're getting a very good yield, whether it's bonds or whatever, that's, I think, in the short term, not a bad place to park your money. Otherwise, be on the lookout, as I said, as markets overshoot, and it's a cliche, but to buy quality companies at really beaten down prices. As to where that is going to be, I really am not that sure because I'm not quite sure where we are in the cycle as far as equities are concerned.
Roy, would education stocks be a good place to hide? Stadio came out with an update this week, and I was quite surprised by the growth in students, especially at AFDA, with that high price point growing at 6%. Would you be looking at education stocks as a defense play at this point, especially
So
Stadio?
you effectively have three education stocks, and they've all really struggled in the recent past, and you can imagine why. It became really complicated during the lockdowns, and also for parents paying school fees became a problem. But the truth is, there's an insatiable demand for good quality, well-priced education in South Africa. Our population is still very young. Education is still an aspirational need and an aspirational good. And these businesses have found very solid niches. So Stadio has been able to capitalize on this distance learning, and it's expanded its market beyond the borders of SA, and is reaching out into those other neighboring countries who may not have the same quality or the same access. So yeah, I would say they bombed out. The thing about them is that they tend to increase fees ahead of inflation, ahead of education. Inflation generally comes in ahead of headline inflation, so they manage their costs relatively well. Your biggest risk for these institutions is municipal costs. Those can actually get out of hand and become very problematic during difficult times. But yes, I think they're uncorrelated, probably a good place to hide at times like this.
All right, talking about times like these, there's a question here with the Afrimat Construction Index showing that the construction industry has grown just 14.7% since 2011. Is there any more upside for companies such as PPC, or is this for patient investors? Or Rikus, would you rather not go in there?
Well, I said, I'm not going to go into PPC, but as I've mentioned on previous programs, we're looking for a unicorn, and that unicorn is government spending into infrastructure, which at the moment isn't happening, which is going to be difficult to happen in future because they simply don't, you know, even with the gains they've had because of the resource cycle, I think a lot of that is going to go to social support. And obviously, the whole industry itself is still in turmoil, whether it be protest or actually allocating funds sensibly. So, if all the factors which at the moment are negatively influencing the construction industry locally, which I've just mentioned, if some of them, all of them, can turn positive, then things like Raubex, things like even Avenge, can perform very well. So I think the best that can be said is that they're probably at the low end of the cycle, but we must look for factors that will indicate that those factors can turn positive. And then being a cyclical stock, one can get very good returns in a period of time. But as to whether it is right now, I don't think so.
Rikus mentions Raubex. I'm wondering if Raubex is not better placed than in that industry, because it seems to be on a good path, diversifying away from road infrastructure, going into mining. It's even now acquiring exploration company Barber Resources. So are you bullish on Raubex at all, Roy?
So Raubex has done a bit of a turnaround, and they're quite well placed on the road, on the road infrastructure side. They've got the big N3 contracts and a couple in the Western Cape. So it looks like from their core business perspective, they're doing well. They've got an order book that stretches out quite far. So they've got reasonable confidence in their ability to price for contracts for the capacity they have. So yeah, I think they're in a good space. They're following the well-worn template from Appina, which is, Don't concentrate on local infrastructure. You need to expand into the mining side. And again, exactly like Afrimark, they're not biting off more than they can chew. It's a small acquisition. They're investing in businesses where they're sure they're going to get the earthworks and all of that sort of work. So yeah, I think it's one to watch. But like Rick was said, and one thing which I really agree with is that fixed investment is currently at the same level as it was in 2014. So that tells you since 94, we've probably had maybe two booms in construction. And that exactly explains why this sector is in trouble. You can't keep the capacity up when there is no work. Yeah. If government is not giving out significant transformational engineering projects, then these guys will all go look for work elsewhere or go bankrupt. And we've seen that play out since 2010, actually. So it's the unicorn you're looking for. When you see government projects coming out regularly, significant and regular projects coming out, addressing the infrastructure backlog and that sort of thing, then you'll see, then I think there'll be an opportunity.
Yeah, all right. There's a company that I'm specifically interested in. It's in the luxury goods space, Gemfield. So posted record revenue at its latest Ruby auction in Bangkok. Really seeming like there's a lot of demand for luxury goods. Of course, there are still those challenges that were named by Richemont in China. But Rikus, would you maybe consider Gemfields a good entry point into the luxury goods space?
Well, it's an entry point. Whether it's a good entry point is up for discussion. There's, I think, apart from the fact that it's a very, very small cap, I mean, they've got some good brands, if not mistaken. They've still got Remy Martin and Fauché and obviously their semi-precious, whether it be rubies or emeralds. So that's the one side of thing, but the other side is also where they're operating. Now, one of the operations is in Mozambique, and we know that there's quite a bit of turmoil, specifically in the region where they have their mines. So in that sense, I would possibly rather concentrate on the guys that retail the products. Now, as I've said, they have some good brands, so they are diversified in that sense. But most of the profit is still coming from digging stuff up, and that's a lot more risky than selling a watch if you're Richemont.
Okay, all
So,
right.
I think I'll end with that.
Yeah, all right. And just to end off, your stock picks for today, Roy?
Yeah, strange you asked me about Stadio. That was always going to be my stock pick. They
Ah.
had an 8 game this week, and it just seems very positive. They're guiding to 20% annual growth for the next 3, 4 years. They're expanding quite well. I think the only thing that's holding them back is the discussions they're having with the Department of Education around accreditation and that sort of thing. And like I said, the share price has really sold off for a business that is well capitalized, is actually pursuing a relatively capital light business model. So yeah, that's my stock pick for today.
All right. And Rick is on your side, your stock pick?
Yeah, when I said previously that, it's difficult to find a place to hide, I forgot to mention, and this is what Roy is also really saying with Stadio, there are companies that are changing what they are doing and changing their earnings profile, or very specifically geared to current circumstances. This is one I've had before. It's called the Gresham House Energy Storage Fund, which is listed in the UK, and they provide, shall we say, backup stories to local councils, specifically battery backup power supply. And we've all seen how that market is changing, specifically with what's happening with energy prices. And I think in future, not only in the current crisis, there's going to be more of a demand for an alternative energy source rather than carbon-based energy sources on a local level. And on a return on equity of about 18%, they're sitting at about a 7.5% PE, sitting on a dividend yield of about 4.5%. That's a kind of specific company that I'm looking for.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time and your great insights today. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Ricus Riordan from PSG Wealth Sandton and Roy Motoane from Absa Asset Management. From Izinat Nkuma and the rest of the team, have a great weekend.